Produced by PI Media. Hi, and welcome to Checkpoint Radio's Cyber Academy. I'm Ran Levy. This is episode 2 of the Cyber Academy, a series of episodes where we explore and discuss basic ideas, terms, and concepts in cybersecurity for the benefit of those who are just starting out in cybersecurity or for those of you who simply want to expand your knowledge on the subject. With me in the studio is Yaniv Balmas, Head of Cyber Research at Checkpoint. Hi, Yaniv.
Hi.
So, Yaniv, our topic today is botnets. In simple terms, a botnet is a collection of internet-connected devices. We're talking about PCs, it could be webcams, DVDs, DVD players, everything that is connected to the web, each running a malware that allows an attacker to access the device and use it to carry out his or her nefarious goals. So what we wish to learn today is, what are botnets used for? And how does the attacker control the bots he has under his command? So, Yaniv, first question, what can an attacker do with a botnet?
If you are an attacker and you have a botnet, basically what you have is a lot of computational power that's basically doesn't belong to you. It runs on different other people's computers or other people's devices, right? And this allows you basically to do whatever you want. Whatever you want to do with a computer, only on a large scale and not from your computer. So it might be used to, at least it's commonly used for several things. Let's take, for example, denial of service or DDoS, distributed denial of service. If I have all of these bots all over the place in the internet, right? And I want to attack some, for example, bank website, right? Now, my attack doesn't have to be complex, complicated or anything. I just want to say, I really dislike this bank, right? And all I want to do is make his website unavailable. So when I say so, all of my millions of bots out there in the internet just issue a lot of requests to this website. This will basically simulate, like, you know, 1 million users are trying to connect to the website at exactly the same time. And if the website is not protected against this kind of, large traffic peak, it might actually go down for legitimate users. Mm-hmm. And that's denial of service, right? A very basic concept, still very effective one, if done.
Yeah, old, almost as the internet is old.
Right, right. Another thing might be spam. So everybody knows spam, right? Surely all of our listeners received at some point of their life some spam email. Did you ever wonder where these spam emails come from? The answer might be a lot of places, but certainly one of them might be from exactly these kind of botnets. So if I'm running a spam campaign, a malicious spam campaign, so that's not something legitimate, I want to hide my activities, I want to use computational power that is not mine and hide myself from the actual activity, I can use my botnet and just give it a command, you know, just send a lot of emails with whatever content I want to this huge list of users. And again, it creates kind of a disconnection between the spam campaign owner and the spam itself. So if somebody will complain about the spam, there is practically, or it's very, very hard to trace it back to the actual owner.
You can't really shut it down because there's no one server to shut down.
Shut down one, I'll bring up 100 exactly. More. That's the concept. And of course, there's another option of just stealing data. So if I have a large botnet installed of computers, I might be wondering, what else is there on these computers? Are there any details or information that is of value to me? Credit card numbers, credentials to applications, to web servers, whatever. I'm a Bitcoin wallet. Whatever I might find interesting, I can just use my botnet and give it a command to search the computer for these things. And if you find any of them, please send it back to me because I like it. Yeah. I need it.
And you mentioned Bitcoin wallets. And of course, one of the things that we nowadays see with botnets is that actually the malware is used to mine Bitcoins or other virtual currencies, because, as you said, it's computation power that you don't have to pay for.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the malware that is actually used to control those hijacked devices. What are the kind of must-have features for such a malware?
Well, it might change from malware to malware and depends on the scenario. But generally speaking, when you have this botnet, basically you have these malwares running on a lot of computers, right? You, as someone who is controlling these botnets, there must be some way for these malwares to communicate with me. The bot master, right? Either give me the information that you stole from me or here are some commands that I want you to execute, right? And that also means that the malware must send or transmit data on very predictable times to the master. I need to know that this malware will transmit data every hour. So that's what I'm expecting. And that's how I need to see the data and handle it. And I think one of the most important concepts in all of this ecosystem is that this communication or the entire activities of the malware is usually stealth. I mean, you don't want anyone to know that a malware is in there or that the malware is communicating, because that's your power. As long as you're stealth, as long nobody knows that you're there, your botnet will stay alive for longer, because if you know that there's a malware on your computer, suddenly you'll go and remove it, right?
So you're saying that there's actual possibility that the user is using his or her computer and it is part of a botnet, but the user has no real idea that his computer is being used by someone else.
Absolutely. That's much more common than what you think.
Okay, so let's turn our attention now to the other side of that communication channel, which is the side of the communication which is used to actually control the botnet. And maybe as a side note, I'll say that one of the most surprising things for me when learning about many attacks and botnets, etc., is exactly how difficult it is sometimes for bot masters to control such large networks. I mean, logistically, from the technological angle, it's sometimes very difficult to control millions upon millions of computers. It's difficult. So what kind of technology does the attacker use in order to communicate with his bots?
First of all, I completely agree with what you said. I mean, basically, you know, a lot of bots communicating with some master is something like, you know, any other legitimate application. So, you know, you have Telegram or WhatsApp,
yeah,
right?
You've got a million users. Here you've got a million bots.
You need
to take care of them.
That's not an easy problem to solve. And WhatsApp or Facebook, you know, they solve that using a lot of engineers sitting and a lot of resources and everything. Usually a bot master will have a lot less resources than that, but it needs to, you know, get to the same functionality. So it's absolutely not an easy task to do.
And they said that crime is the easy way in life. You find yourself working harder than being in the office 12 hours a day.
You know, it's even more than that, because on top of all of these technical difficulties, you also have the fact, what we talked about before, you need to remain stealth. You can't just do it. I mean, because it's not completely the Wild West. There are a lot of security vendors and, you know, cybersecurity is a big thing. And everyone in this entire industry is trying exactly to locate this malicious communication or malwares and remove them. So you have to fight against that as well.
It's not an easy money. It's not easy money.
Not exactly easy money.
Yeah. So what are the technologies used to actually control the botnets?
So basically, this changes over the years. And traditionally, talking to a CNC server, command and control server, the one that's used to control the malwares or the botnet, right, is traditionally hosted on a website, just a web server, not necessarily a website, but a web server. And this web server has an IP address or domain name, like any other web server out there, and the malware knows this domain name. They will use it to communicate with him like they communicate with anything else. So that's the really traditional way of doing a CNC. But as I mentioned, this is a war. I mean, the bad guys, the botnet masters, do something, and we, the security industry, try to prevent them from doing so. So it kind of evolves over the years. So think about it okay, we gave the very basic example of a malware talking to a single CNC server, right? Now, what happens if me, sitting in Checkpoint, I would identify that this domain or this IP address is a CNC server, okay? I can do many things. I can go and tell it to the police.
Pull the plug. Yeah, pull the plug on the server.
Please pull the plug. I can release protections to all of my customers. I can really do many things. And if I manage to do it, then this is a really bad news for the botmaster, because once I was able to do it, he just lost control of a million bots that he has all over there. And he basically needs to redistribute, build up the entire infrastructure. It's really not good for them. So they are always trying to find new ways, new techniques to kind of bypass this. So that's why I'm saying it's a war. It's kind of a cat and mouse game, right? Yeah. So if we do that, they might say, okay, so I'm not going to use one server anymore. I'm going to use rotating servers, kind of in a predictable time. I'm going to, you know, set up another server and then another server and then another server. So if you take down one, no problem. I just need to wait 1 hour. My bots will talk to another server. That's one way of doing that. Another way might be by creatively thinking. A CNC server doesn't necessarily need to be a web server. It can also be many things, many other things. Let's take, for example, social media, right? So we have Twitter, right? Twitter is totally legitimate. What happens if I choose Twitter as my CNC
infrastructure? So you issue commands as tweets.
The malware will just post tweets. To anyone looking at that, they will just look like normal tweets or maybe gibberish or definitely something not interesting. But me as the botmaster, I know where to look and how to read the message and to interpret it. And I can, you know, have a completely legitimate channel of communication with my bots, which it will be very hard to take down. No one will take down Twitter, right?
So it's a very creative kind of cat and mouse game, as you said.
Yeah, from both sides, by the way.
I think that in something like the 2000s, there was a rise of peer-to-peer networks in botnets, because it's very hard to take down. The same way that it's difficult to take down like the BitTorrent network, it's difficult to take a botnet that uses the same technology.
Yeah, the concept is to decentralize, not have one CNC server, but use everyone as CNC servers. It has its errors, by the way. It has ways to attack it, but nothing is perfect. We find a way, they find another way. That's how life goes.
Very interesting. I hope you learned a lot from this conversation, at least on the basic ideas of a botnet. And that's it for this episode of Checkpoint's Cyber Academy. As always, we are more than happy to hear from you. What did you think about the concept of the Cyber Academy? How can we make it better? And of course, suggestions for future topics. My email address is ran@ranlevy.com. That's RANLEVI. And you can find me also on Twitter at @ranlevy. I'm not a bot, so when I tweet, don't expect me to take over any computers. Yaniv Almas, head of cyber research at Checkpoint, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. For more episodes of our podcast, visit research.checkpoint.com and look for the Checkpoint Radio banner at the top right corner, or search for Checkpoint Research in your favorite podcast application. Checkpoint Radio is produced by PI Media. Learn more at podil.net. Bye-bye.